I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Excellent.
And I can see you, which is fantastic. Oh,
Okay.
now you're waving. Excellent.
Technology is amazing.
Said the guy in purple is not waving.
Wave. All right, for our second talk in this session, we have Bruce Schneier, fellow of the Berkman at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society, and he will be talking to us about surveillance, the NSA, and everything.
Hey, well, thanks for inviting me. I'm really sorry I can't be there. I'm actually here in Vancouver at the IETF meeting, where we're talking about much the same thing. So I want to take this time to give a longer talk than I did here on the different NSA programs, what we know, what we don't know, what I think is going to happen. So for me, the neatest thing about all these NSA stories are the code names. I love the code names. So last week we learned about Muscular, which is the NSA's code name for their project to collect Google and Yahoo information by tapping in their communications lines between their data centers. This is different from the still unnamed program they have of collecting buddy lists and email address books by tapping into the connections between the users and the service providers. This is also different from PRISM, which is the NSA's program for getting data from these different service providers by asking them. That generic tapping in the on the fiber, we've heard called upstream. My guess is that's not the name of a program, but there are lots of different programs. Each one is going to be a different company or a different system. There's Fairview, there's Blarney, Blarney is AT&T, there's Oakstar, there's Stormview, there's Little, Little is Level 3 Communications, Remedy, Remedy is British Telecom. But these are all different programs to tap communications. Quantum, Quantum is the NSA's code name for their packet injection system. So this is something that sits on the backbone and can do real-time responses to packets. This runs on something called Tumult, or possibly Turbulence or Turmoil. I can't tell if those are three separate systems, three generations of systems. There's something called FoxAcid. FoxAcid is basically Metasploit. The NSA calls this an exploit orchestrator. Think of Metasploit with a budget. Different exploits are Validator, United Rake. My favorite for the worst code name ever, Egotistical Giraffe. The particular exploit you're served is determined by a really cool code name, Ferret Cannon. After Ferret Cannon serves you an exploit that compromises your computer, there are various implants the NSA can install on your machine. Codename Blackheart, Mineralized, Highlands, Vagrant. I listed them all in a blog post a couple of weeks ago along with what they did. This showed up in a document released by the French newspapers. There are a variety of analysis tools, Marina, Pinwheel, Mainway. These are databases where your data ends up. XKeyscore. Final code name I'll talk about is Bull Run. Bull Run is the code name for the NSA program that deliberately inserts backdoors into the software products you buy. There's a lot more. I mean, it seems like the NSA can't do anything without a code name, and I think lots more are coming. There's a lot here we know, and there's a lot we don't know. And I think that there's a lot we're not going to know forever. For example, details on cryptography are not in the documents. The names of the companies and products that have been subverted by Bull Run are not there. A lot of this is called ECI, Extremely Compartmented Information. And it's basically not written down, so we're just not going to see it. I think this is okay. I think focusing on the details will lead us to solve yesterday's problems. We really have to understand today's problems and tomorrow's problems. I mean, the basic takeaway here is that the NSA has turned the internet into a giant surveillance platform. And this system is robust. It's robust politically, it's robust legally, and it's robust technically. I mean, that's what we're learning. The NSA does things in many different ways. All right, so step back and look at the trends here, and I think this is important. Right? Fundamentally, data is a byproduct of the information society. Right? Everything we do on computers creates a transaction record. Right? Data is a byproduct of our information society socialization. Right? Companies and computers are increasingly mediating our interactions, and that produces data records. Right? This data is being increasingly stored and increasingly searched. And this is fundamentally just Moore's law. Right? Data storage drops to free, data processing drops to free. It's easier to save stuff than to throw it away. Right? And you've all know this. You all hit the point when it was cheaper for you to save all of your email than figure out what to save. Right? There was a point where search became cheaper than sort. And that's where we are pretty much all data. Right? We're leaving digital footprints everywhere. And this is exacerbated by two trends. Right, cloud computing, where our data is not under our control, and the new endpoints that are more under vendor control, you know, like the iPhone. Right, this all means that data is moving away from us. Right, and the effects are stuff we've talked about: wholesale surveillance, surveillance backwards in time, the death of any ephemeral conversation at all, systems that never forget. And these are just the trends of computing. This isn't due to malice on anybody's part. This is a natural byproduct of using computers for everything. And the result here is a public-private surveillance partnership. There's a fundamental alliance of government and corporate interests. The NSA surveillance largely piggybacks on corporate capabilities through cooperation, through bribery, through threats, through compulsion. The NSA gets the data from corporations that already have the data or are already touching the data. Right? Surveillance is fundamentally the business model of the internet. Right? We build systems that spy on people in exchange for services. And then there are lots of reasons for this. Right? Privacy is not salient. People aren't making rational buying decisions. The fundamental perverting effect of free market failures. I mean, there's a bunch of things going on here, but it's not like the NSA woke up and said, let's spy on everybody. They woke up and said, wow, the internet's already spying on everybody. Let's get ourselves a copy. Right? Much of what they're getting is metadata. And I think there's a lot of confusion about this term. Right? It's only metadata is what you'll hear. I think the way to think about this is metadata equals surveillance. And there's an easy thought experiment here, right? Imagine you hired a private detective to eavesdrop on somebody. That detective would plant a bug in their house, on their car, they would tap their phone, and you would get details of conversations. If you hired that same detective to put someone under surveillance, what you'd get is a report. The report is where the person went, what he did, who he spoke to, what he looked at, what he read. That's all metadata. When President Obama says, don't worry, it's only metadata, he's saying, don't worry, you're just under surveillance. Right? And this is important. A lot of our public debates are individual. And this is one of my fears about the political debate. Right? In this case, it's never just one thing. Right? It's not just Verizon metadata. It's Verizon metadata plus contact lists plus data mining. Right? It's not just drones. It's drones plus face recognition plus Facebook's tagged photo database, right? It's everything together. And the surveillance state is well robust. And this is not just about the NSA, right? It's about the CIA, it's about the FBI. We have a window into the NSA's activities due to the Snowden documents, but this really is what any well-funded nation state adversary would do, right? We assume these same tactics are elsewhere. Certainly, the NSA has a larger budget than everybody else, and the United States has an extraordinarily privileged position on the internet that lets it do things other countries can't, but we know that China is doing a lot of the same things, for example. Right? And we also know that technology democratizes. Today's NSA secret programs become tomorrow's PhD theses, become the next day's high school science fair projects. And we have a choice here. Right, the choice is an internet vulnerable to all attackers or an internet secure for all users. Right? And that choice is actually reflected in the NSA's mission. The NSA has a dual mission. Right? We're learning a lot about how they spy on us, but their other mission is to protect communications. And I think what happened is after the September 11th terrorist attacks, the spying mission won. Right? And very little of what the NSA does involves protecting communications. So how do we get here? I mean, I think fundamentally we have made surveillance too cheap. Right? We have made it too easy for the NSA to conduct ubiquitous surveillance. And to protect ourselves from the NSA and everybody, we have to make surveillance expensive again. So there's some good news, bad news. Right? In his first interview in The Guardian, Edward Snowden talked about it. And he has a great quote. I'm going to read it. He says, "Encryption works. Properly implemented strong crypto systems are one of the few things you can rely on." Right? And we know this is true. This is the lesson from the NSA's attempts to break Tor. Right? You read all those documents, the NSA cannot break Tor, and it annoys them. Right? They are forced to attack individual users through Firefox. This is a lesson from the NSA's program to collect contact lists. Right? If you looked at the data, the NSA collected about 10 times as much data from Yahoo as it did from Google, even though Google is probably about 10 times the size. Now, and the reason is that Google used SSL by default and Yahoo does not. To their credit, Yahoo announced like the day after they would implement SSL by default. Right? But SSL protected user data. Right? This is also the lesson of Muscular. If you look at how the NSA targeted Google and Yahoo, they did it inside Google and Yahoo's network. And there's a map, a hand drawing of the Google network that pointed out this is the point where Google removes SSL. Right? They attacked the data where it was not protected by SSL. So encryption works. Now, unfortunately, that's not enough. And Edward Snowden actually said it and then followed the next sentence after that quote. He said, "Unfortunately, endpoint security is so terrifically weak that the NSA can frequently find ways around it." Right? What I wrote is that the math works, but the math has no agency. Right? Here's our vulnerabilities. It's the software. It's the networks. All right, so what does this mean? We do know that the NSA has some piece of cryptanalysis that we don't have. Right? We sort of know it theoretically. They make a huge investment in mathematics. They hire an extraordinary number of mathematicians. Right? They are a black hole. They get everything we do, and they have their own stuff. But there was a sentence in the Black Budget, which the Washington Post released. DNI James Clapper, in his introduction, said this. And it's interesting. Listen to the words. "We are investing in groundbreaking cryptanalytic capabilities to defeat adversarial cryptography and exploit internet traffic." I mean, that doesn't sound like they're hiring a bunch of mathematicians and hoping they get lucky. Right? It sounds like they have something theoretical and they're solving the engineering problems to make it work. Right? They're building the massive computer. They're building the custom whatever, right? So there's something there. We don't know what it is. I have three guesses. You know, I'll give them to you in a random order because my order changes week to week. The first is elliptic curves. It's reasonable to assume that the NSA has more advanced techniques for breaking elliptic curves. And actually, more importantly, that they've identified some class of elliptic curves, right, some unknown class that we can't identify, that they have some advantage over. Right, we do believe they have tried to manipulate the public selection of curves. Right, I think that's very plausible. My second guess is that they have some advance in basic factoring, in breaking RSA. This is also plausible, you know, in the academic community. We improve regularly every couple of years, factor of 2, factor of 10, factor of 5. Right? If you figure the NSA is, you know, 10 years ahead, you know, maybe they have improvements by a cumulative factor of a few hundred. Certainly plausible. And maybe they have something more. My third guess is there's a practical attack against RC4. RC4 is a very common algorithm. It's still secure, but it's kind of just on the edge. And it's plausible there is some massively parallel practical attack against RC4. So those are my three guesses. I mean, the long shot guess is AES. You know, I don't think that's likely. Some people have speculated that. But we do know that most of how the NSA breaks cryptography is by getting around it. Right? They exploit bad implementations. They exploit default or weak keys. They deliberately insert backdoors in encryption products. And they have teams that go and exfiltrate keys, which is the NSA term for hacking and stealing them. But think of the difference here, right? Those are targeted attacks, as opposed to sitting on Google's inter-data center backbone and grabbing everything, right? They're forced to go and target just the data they need. Internal self-corrections. So even not doing anything, I think we're going to see some changes. Now, as amazing as it might seem, the NSA had no contingency plans in place for their secrets being completely leaked. I mean, I think that's amazing. It took General Alexander months to come up with a coherent response. I think that's changed. I think the cost-benefit analysis has changed inside the NSA. That while they looked at the risks of their adversaries finding out what they did, they never really took into account the risks of the public finding out what they did. And you know, right now, the nature of secrecy is changing. And I think we have to assume, and the NSA does too, that everything they do will become public in 3 to 5 years. That's fundamentally the way secrecy works. Whistleblowing is easier. It's harder to keep secrets. And this makes a difference, right? You know, if the big reveal from the Snowden revelations was that the NSA spied on North Korea and the Taliban, nobody would care, right? It's that the NSA spied on Belgium, or even worse, that the UK spied on Belgium, which I guess is like Connecticut spying on Nebraska. And corporations, too, have a new cost-benefit analysis. Right? It used to be that there was no cost to cooperating with the NSA. They'd walk into AT&T and say, we want a copy of everything. And AT&T would say, sure, here, put your stuff in that closet. Right? That's not true anymore. There's an enormous public relations cost to cooperating with the NSA. Already, we've seen a bunch of studies on how cloud computing companies, software companies, hardware companies are losing sales, mostly foreign, because they have cooperated with the NSA. Turns out that having an NSA code name is not something you want. Right? And now companies are realizing that there are PR benefits to fighting. Right? Fighting technically, fighting legally. And we're seeing Google do that, Yahoo do that, Apple do that, Microsoft. Right? All of these companies are standing up and fighting the NSA, and I think they're benefiting. Right? So we're going to see new cost-benefit analyses. I mean, I'm amazed that I have not seen any documents where the NSA weighs the costs and benefits of the individual programs. I guess in some ways I shouldn't be surprised the TSA doesn't do that either, but it seems like something that should be done. So I think these corrections are going to happen inside the NSA regardless. I think there'll be some external self-corrections. There's been a surprising amount of political blowback from the NSA surveillance. Right? All the European countries, Brazil. And I think that the administration, any future administration, will limit what the NSA does because that blowback is damaging. I think there'll be some revisiting of the effectiveness of bulk collection. Right? The past two generals in charge of the NSA, the current one, General Alexander, and the previous one, General Hayden, have both been proponents of collect everything. right? Get everything possible. And a lot of people don't believe this is effective, right? Too much noise obscures the signal, false alarms overwhelm the system, right? And a reliance on raw detection inhibits other solutions. So I think there's a lot of discussion about this. There's also a lot of limitations of intelligence. Right? You know, this intelligence seems not to have a lot of value. Right? We're learning this as we hear about the NSA spying on the EU or the G20. I mean, a really good example is that we knew, based on intelligence, 3 days before Syria used chemical weapons on its own people. Right? We had that data. But we didn't do anything. So the question is why? There are four possibilities. One, we couldn't connect the dots. So we knew, but we didn't know we knew. It wasn't until after the fact that we realized we knew. Second option is we weren't sure. Right? We had the information, but we didn't have a confirmation. Three, we were sure, but there was nothing we could do. Right? We were powerless to prevent it, so we just knew. Fourth possibility, to me the most interesting, is that we knew we could do something, but by doing something, we would reveal that we knew. That would be revealing sources and methods, and the Syrians would have taken pains to close those loopholes. Yeah, and it seems like a lot of cases, NSA surveillance isn't really worth it. Right? We know something, we can't do anything, so it's mostly voyeurism. And there's also going to be corrections, I think, with NSA's dual mission. Right? This mission of exploiting communications and protecting communications is supposed to be more in balance. After 9/11, it went way out of whack, and I expected that it will be rebalanced, just kind of naturally. Right? That there's a lot of value in securing communications. So that's the self-corrections. Externally, there's a lot we can do too. I mean, and much of what I talked about here at the IETF was about that. What are the technical countermeasures we can do to limit NSA surveillance? Right? And the goal here is interesting. The goal is to make eavesdropping more expensive. Right? The flaw we have is that eavesdropping has become very, very cheap. Right? That it is cheaper to broadly collect everything than to target what you collect. And I guess this is the same lesson we learned from Edward Snowden. Right? That if you break into a server and you want 5 documents and there are 10,000, it's easier to take them all. Right? The NSA does that same calculus. It's easier to grab everything and sort it later than it is to target what you need. Right? So the goal should be to force the NSA and all similar adversaries, right, to abandon wholesale collection in favor of targeted collection. And there are a lot of things we can do to change that economics. First one is to enable encryption. I mean, the more we enable encryption, the safer everybody is. I mean, right now there's very little encryption, and it's a red flag. Right? If you use encryption, you are targeted as someone who uses encryption. So ubiquitous encryption not only makes it harder for these adversaries, it provides cover for those who really need it. Right? That's why we all should use it. I mean, precisely if we don't need it is why we should use it. The second thing, which I think is real important, actually, let me add something to encryption, is adding perfect forward secrecy whenever possible. I mean, you don't want it if the NSA or anybody breaks into your VPN and grabs the key, that the key is good for everybody for a year. Now, you want perfectly forward secret systems so that the key keeps getting updated, old keys are obsolete, and they have to break in again and again. And so that's encryption. The second thing I think is important is what I call target dispersal. You know, the consolidation of all of our data has just made the NSA's job easier. Right? We were safer when our email was distributed among 10,000 ISPs than when it's now distributed among 10. Right? Fundamentally, that's more dangerous. So any decentralization is going to make us safer. We need more usable application layer encryption. Now, I mean, the lessons of PGP are interesting. Right? It's been 20 years, and we still don't have good email encryption. and we should. Compare that with OTR. OTR is off the record. It's an encryption program for chat. It's easy to use, and it's easy to install, works great. Or disk encryption, which is also really easy to use. We need more open standards, more open source. Right? You know, if we're assuming that the NSA is subverting products, closed source products are easier to subvert. You have companies you can pressure. They have profit motives. Open source is just harder. And more endpoint security in general. Right? There is there's a Fox Asset manual that talks about the NSA's procedures. And one of the things they mention are something they call PSPs, personal security products. The more personal security products we have, the more dangerous it is, the more risky it is for any group to go in to your computer and hack it. Right? That makes it more secure. We need integrated anonymity tools. I mean, the lessons of Tor are fantastic. Tor works. The more of that, the better. And lastly, and I think most importantly, and maybe the hardest, we need assurance. You know, we need mechanisms to ensure that the software we use does what it's supposed to do and not anything else. And this is an incredibly difficult problem, but it really is a vital one. Because without it, we just never know if the patches we download, the software we download, is Trojan or not. I mean, basically what I'm trying to do in all of these is to leverage the economics, leverage the physics, and leverage the math. Right? The NSA, you know, might have a bigger budget, but they can't break the laws of physics. Right? Limit bulk collection and force targeted collection. I mean, that should be the goal of all the technical countermeasures. I mean, largely though, this is really a political problem. And a lot of the solutions will be political. And we kind of know what the solutions are, right? It's things like transparency, oversight, accountability, right? We know how this works. We've done it again and again in our society. It's hard, but we can do it. Right? One of the problems is laws have lagged technology. There's a quote by General Hayden from about a year ago where he talks about the NSA in law. And what he says is, he's talking as the NSA, give me the box to operate in, and I will operate within that box. I'll push the boundaries of it, but I'll operate within the box you give me. The problem we have is that the fundamental technological advances increase the gray area in the box. Laws just don't keep up with technology. Right? New things become possible. They're gray areas. The NSA rushes to fill them. And by the time lawmakers get around to it, NSA says, you can't take away my capabilities. Right? That makes it harder. There are a bunch of laws going through process right now. Some of them are preventing bulk collection on innocents. Some of them are prohibiting the NSA from forcing companies to weaken their products. I worry about all of these laws is that they're too focused. They focus on specific programs. They focus on specific legal capabilities. And if you think about the NSA's attacks against Google users, they have many different programs under many different legal authorities to do much the same thing. Right? That's going to make this hard. It's going to be really hard to convince lawmakers to get this right. It's going to be really easy for someone to water it down in committee. Maybe my biggest fear in the United States is that we pass some laws, they do nothing, and then lawmakers congratulate themselves on a job well done. I mean, my guess is we're not going to be able to win the stop doing this debate. We might be able to win the tell us what you're doing debate. And, of course, the problem with you know, any of these legal debates is that reigning in the NSA only affects the United States. Right? Any law changes will not affect what the NSA does to non-U.S. persons, and not a chance. It will not affect the actions of other countries, and it will not affect non-nation state actors. And, you know, we haven't heard this argument yet, but I expect you'll hear something of this form. We can't rein in the NSA because if you do that, China wins. Right? That's an arms race argument. Right? This is a zero-sum game. It's either us or them. We have to do it, otherwise they win. You know, and that argument will get a lot of resonance, but it's fundamentally not true. You know, in the end, we need to get governments, all governments, to realize that a secure internet is in everybody's best interest. Right? That's really the only way to turn a zero-sum game into a positive-sum game. And then it becomes much like any of the other difficult problems. Money laundering, chemical weapons, right? We know it's a positive-sum game. We develop laws and treaties to support the societal goals. We develop technologies to support the legal regime. We deal with laws and technologies to deal with non-compliant actors. And we slowly get better. I mean, in the long run, I think we will win the protecting is more important than eavesdropping debate. But it is the long run. Right? And this gets back to the NSA's dual role. And the way I think about it is that a lot of this surveillance doesn't help. And just because everyone else is building the Maginot Line doesn't mean it's a good idea for us to do it. Right? If we can convince lawmakers of that, we have a shot. The problem, though, is robust. Right? It's robust politically, it's robust legally, and it's robust technically. But we have to solve this. Again, not just for the NSA, but for everybody. Right? Other governments, cyber criminals, rogue actors. What the Snowden documents are showing us is how anybody with a budget would do this. At the same time, I think it's also equally important that we have to prevent the balkanization of the internet. I mean, to me, the worst blowback from all of this are countries talking about setting up domestic internets, right? Limiting the international nature of the internet. And how much the US's actions are emboldening much worse governments to do surveillance on their citizens, right? That China, Russia, Egypt, Syria, Tunisia. I mean, all of these countries are using US actions to justify what they're doing. Right? This is bad. I think a free and open internet is in everybody's best interest. Near term, we need to figure out who we can trust. I mean, a lot of the internet governance models are broken now. Largely, we've run the internet as a benign U.S. dictatorship under the belief that U.S. interests were largely in line with world interests. Right? That model is gone. And we have groups like the ITU trying to take over, which I think would be a disaster. But we do need better governance models now that it can't be U.S.-centric. So that's near term. More generally, I think this problem is this problem is bigger than the NSA. This problem is bigger than security. I mean, fundamentally, this is a debate about data. It's a debate about data ownership, about data surveillance, about data sharing, about surveillance as a business model, and the fundamental dichotomy between the societal benefits of big data versus the individual risks of personal data. I mean, we might not buy the argument, but the basic NSA argument is you have to give us your data because we're keeping you safe. Right? That your data has value to you in aggregate. Right? I mean, this is the same debate as behavioral data for advertising, right? As health data for medical benefit, as education data for group benefit. I mean, as movement data for traffic benefit. Anyway, I mean, I now use Waze on my smartphone. I mean, Waze is a new traffic app that basically surveils everybody who uses it and gets real-time traffic flow data from the movements. Is giving up my locational privacy in exchange for that worth it? Right. Generally, how do we design systems that benefit society as a whole while at the same time protecting people individually? Right? This is a fundamental problem. I think this is the fundamental problem of the information society. Right? This is it. This is the problem we have to solve. Solving it will take decades. This NSA issue is, I think, the first big manifestation of it, and it's where we're starting. So that's what I have prepared. I'm happy to take questions if we could do it. I'm suggesting possibly you SMS me with questions.
We actually should have the ability to do questions as long as people use the microphone.
Well, I can hear you, so that works.
And everybody else who talks into other microphones should be able, you should be able to hear them too. So,
excellent.
First, shall we give him a round of applause? We have one microphone there in the middle of the room, so
I saw the guy in purple clapping this time. That's good.
Thank you. Great talk. So, what are the chances that we can change the way the end users willingly participate in all this surveillance? Everyone here is carrying a phone that is tracking their location. We're happy to give up iSync on our Macs and use iCloud instead, so Apple keeps a copy of our data. And I could go on forever, of course. We're basically being sold and trained to join the surveillance state and give up our data every chance we get.
So that's true. I mean, and there's a lot of psychological data on this. And some of it is that we just don't know how valuable our data is. Right? I mean, Google released their quarterly profits recently. That profit represents the differential between what our data is worth and what we're, you know, what we're getting in return. I don't know. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think this will be solved not through economics, but through rights. I mean, just like we've decided that we do not want people selling child labor or selling their organs, that we're going to have some privacy regime that that is based on rights and not economics. It's hard. It's not deliberately not salient. Right? These sites do their best to make sure privacy isn't salient when you go on and do your thing. So, you know, visibility will help. I think it's going to be a combination of economic incentives and regulation.
Hello. I have a question. So you said, I think twice, a secure intranet is in everyone's best interest. So while I agree, I think that's sort of the same problem as the like open source or free software is in everyone's best interest, yet it still has very little adoption, at least on the personal level for individuals with devices. So if we've in some ways, like desktop and mobile, failed to have that happen, how is a secure internet for everyone going to happen? How are we going to get that to be adopted?
You know, I don't know. The real answer has to be that those of us who build the tools have to bake it in. Right? And you know, we've done it in some instances. We've done pretty well with viruses. I mean, antivirus works, and we convince people that everybody needs antivirus. Right? We've done that with automatic update. We do that in some point areas. I agree, this is an uphill struggle. And my guess is the users largely don't know. I mean, we're moving into a world where the user will know less about security, right? Because as the data moves into the cloud, as we use devices like our iPhone to access them where we can't control them nearly as well, security is more and more out of our hands. I mean, anybody in the audience know what operating system Facebook uses? Anybody care? I mean, we don't. Right, we expect them to keep our data private to whatever extent they do, and we don't know how they do it. So my guess is that this will more and more flow out of the user's hands, that the users will have devices which are entirely managed by a service provider or a manufacturer, that their data will entirely reside somewhere in the cloud, and it'll be up to those vendors to provide real security. And I think we're seeing changes. I mean, I like seeing the fractures in the public-private surveillance partnership. Google is seriously pissed off. And they're doing a lot now to secure our data. And they see market value in doing it. I mean, so that's one of the leverage points.
Thank you.
So, Bruce, I, like you, have a community of family and friends that are not technical, and I have a varying degrees of success in getting them to adopt certain things which are more secure. Maybe it's Firefox with NoScript. Maybe it's HTTPS everywhere. I'm curious, the family and friends that come to you for advice, I'm wondering if you can share two or three that you might think are, these are good ways to improve the expense.
You know, I mean, for people who are not technical, the more you can do behind the scenes, the better, right? You know, if I could configure someone else's Firefox and add a few good plugins, if I could turn on desktop, hard drive encryption, if I can make sure automatic updates are on. I mean, this is all simple hygiene. And honestly, I mean, I don't think it's going to work against a nation-state adversary. It'll work against a lot of other adversaries. I think one of the lessons from the NSA documents is that the NSA wants into your computer, they're in, period. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter how good you are, they're going to get in. But I don't think that's what we're here to prevent. I mean, I want to prevent the wholesale surveillance. I want to prevent the bulk collection of data. I don't think I could win at all the targeted collection. I mean, because you know, fundamentally, we all know this, on the internet today, attacking is easier than defending. You know, and that might take 20, 30 years for that to shift. I think it will shift, but it will be a lot of years in the future. But it's the bulk collection that I'm most concerned about.
You indicated that you had been speaking at the IETF about this today. Are you able and willing to summarize what some of the other participants might have said on this same area?
You know, I probably would have if I took notes. I'm sure there are meeting minutes. It was surprising. So this was a plenary about internet hardening. And it was surprising to me how much consensus there was that the IETF should take on this issue and do what they can to harden the internet, that to build protocols that are more secure, that to try to get standards adopted that are more secure. And they did about five hums at the end, and three of them were unanimous. And I forget which ones, and I'm sorry about that. But you know, question is, will it sustain? Because if you've been to any of these meetings, you know it's a long, hard slog from idea to standard. But there is a feeling here that, and one of the people said this, that this is an attack against the internet, that the internet is under attack, and that we should defend the internet. I think that's a great way of thinking of it. Right? Again, it's not just the NSA. The NSA is just who we have the documents about. It's all of these sorts of attackers. And this is an attack that, while we knew about theoretically, the scale and the scope is still a surprise, and that we should defend ourselves.
Hi, this is a technical conference, obviously, but I have a slightly non-technical thought about how maybe we could long-term approach this. What if we focus on educating, enlightening the populace so that our behavior patterns are less destructive to our species?
I'm not optimistic about that. I assume you've met the populace. I don't know. I think these are hard technical problems are hard. I mean, it's not just security. It's climate change. It's healthcare. Right? I mean, these are problems where experts have a lot to say, and politically experts are ignored. So I don't know how much. I mean, this gets back to educating the users. I mean, that always is always fraught with danger.
You mentioned a few times about how the NSA has a dual mission, and it seems like it's been skewed more towards the collection, less towards the security. They're known to have been attempting to weaken security products. That sounds to me like it's not just skewed. They've completely abandoned and are in fact working against the goal of making our communications more secure, which seems to me would be sort of against the whole charter of the organization. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree. And I think the biggest sense of betrayal that many of us felt was from Bull Run, was from that program. Right? Deliberately weakening the stuff we use is cheating in a way that, you know, grabbing traffic of the internet backbone isn't. So yes, I agree with you.
Hi, so I had a conversation with some members of the European Parliament, the equivalent of the European senators, for those who are not familiar with them, from the Industry and Research Committee, I think. And they were, you know, visiting an internet company, wondering about, you know, how we were doing and to keep users' data safe. And they focused on cookies. What are you doing to inform users you're keeping cookies on them? And I was just sad, and I kind of went off on a rant about how, you know, Sony lost 100 million people's credit card details recently, and is that not more important? And they just looked at me with blank looks, going, oh, we didn't know about that. So in a world where our legislators are so divorced from reality, is it completely up to the engineers to fix this?
I think it's not, but you point to what I think is a legislative problem, that they focus on point things. And it's the point things that mattered 2 years ago, right? We know now that Google is moving away from cookies because they got better tracking technology. We know that super cookies are being used more and more because more of us are deleting our cookies or managing our cookies, right? So regulation on that one technology, by the time it's passed, is irrelevant. And then this is why we really have to push thinking about the broad problems and not the technical point problems. This does mean that legislation is going to be hard. I don't see how we can work without it. I mean, there are stuff the techies can do, but we can't do it all. But, you know, the more we can do, the better. But, you know, to me, both are necessary. But, yes, I mean, I'm frustrated, too, at those exact same sorts of debates. I mean, we had the United States, the Amash Amendment, which would have just dealt with the particular Verizon and probably others bulk metadata collection order from the NSA. Right? I guarantee you they have three other ways into that same metadata we don't know about.
Hi. If we assume for the moment that the vast majority of the NSA leadership are what we might call true believers and they believe they're doing the right thing and that these data collection methods are necessary, and if we further assume that 51% of our political leadership probably has some email or phone conversation or Skype conversation they don't want revealed, how do we actually expect the political leadership to actually take any kind of action to stop the NSA?
Right, so this was basically the J. Edgar Hoover argument, right? That does the NSA have so much dirt on our leaders that they've now running the government? I don't believe that's so. I have no evidence that it's so. I have no evidence that it's not so. If it is so, problems are way worse than we're imagining, and the solutions will be way harder. I just don't believe there is that sort of political blackmail going on. That's just too risky. I think there actually is an honest belief within the NSA that they're doing the right thing. I think they're honestly surprised at the public reaction. And that no, they are not, you know, secretly running everything because they have dirt on everybody. Now, it's possible. This feels like too much of a conspiracy theory.
I mean, it's happened before with Hoover. It's not entirely unprecedented.
Hello. So you correctly identified the fact that this is all blowback from the 9/11 incident. So, given that the bulk, and I personally do not see that there is a big outcry from the public. I see a big outcry from the IT community, but the general public, I don't feel the weight of their opposition to this. So how do you feel that it's actually possible to get a big groundswell, enough of a groundswell of the general public involved in this to make a real change? Because quite frankly, I think that it comes down to their safety. They view this as something that has helped keep the peace or keep us from coming under attack. So they're letting it slide to some degree.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, my mother has told me this. Right? I don't think there's a groundswell of opposition. I think most people don't care. There's a bigger groundswell in Europe. There's a bigger groundswell in Brazil. But in the U.S., they're right. There is a general belief that the NSA is keeping us safe, and what do I have to hide, and this is not a problem. And if there is going to be reform, it's going to be because of outrage among politicians, and it's surprising how much outrage there is, and it's bipartisan outrage. I mean, the interesting thing about this issue is it's not Democrat versus Republican. There are people in both parties who are for this and against this. Right. So that means there's opportunity for real change. And I think now there are lobbying dollars arrayed against this. Right? The companies that are the IT companies that are losing money really want this fixed. There's an article yesterday, about Google's lobbying efforts against spying. And they now have the eighth largest corporate lobbying arm in the country. So there's some big money here arrayed. So I think that's where the leverage point is and not a groundswell of support. I mean, yes, you're right. We'll see what happens. I'm not that optimistic. But I think that's where you're going to see the change points if we get them.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
I think we have time for one more question.
Hi. So if you're talking to a friend and the friend says, oh, I've got nothing to hide, this is not a problem, what would be your favorite counter argument?
You know, I'll say, what's your salary? I do that on the radio a lot. That works. You could ask him his sexual fantasies. That's always fun. Right. And then you could remind him that Google knows the sexual fantasies of everybody in the room. And then that's kind of creepy. The nothing to hide argument, I think, is a big red herring. I mean, privacy is not about something to hide. Privacy is about individuality. It's about freedom. It's about liberty. There's a lot written about living in a society without privacy and how you lose your sense of self. That this full exposure means you have to conform and you lose individuality. And these are hard arguments to make. And that, I think, is why this is such a tough issue. That privacy is one of those things you don't really notice until it's gone. But those are the sorts of tacks I take when I discuss this. And you're right. In a lot of cases, it's not convincing, especially when you are fighting a fear argument. Right? The fundamental government argument is terrorists will kill your children. It's really hard to counteract that. I mean, I can explain why it's not true, but, you know, people are going to stop listening because the fear is so great. Now, the fact that the fear subsided over the past decade is why we're here. If this happened 10 years ago, there'd be no debate. Right? Everyone would call for the arrest of every reporter who's been reporting this, and this would be over. The fact that it's 2013 means we can't actually have this debate, which shows you how far things are come. But I think privacy is essential for democracy, for liberty, for freedom, and it's far more important than something to hide. So thanks very much. This was actually good. This worked. I am surprised.
Thank you for joining us, Bruce.